This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids. We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing. Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Today's show was pre-recorded. We won't be taking calls. This is Childhood Matters, and I'm Nurse Rona. We talk about parenting issues, parenting successes, and parenting possibilities. How's it going at your house? Today, we'll discuss children and nature. For some parents, it takes courage to let their kids explore in nature, and in some areas, it seems impossible to find safe and beautiful places to go, but you can do it. And today, we'll give you some encouragement and also let you know why it's vital to your children's health and well-being. There's growing evidence that spending time with nature will make your child healthier, happier, and even smarter. It enhances problem-solving skills, creativity, and emotional intelligence. And of course, it's fun. When I take a walk near the water or sit in a beautiful spot listening to the birds, I can feel my stress going down. I can feel my breathing get deeper and slower. And a sense of calm just overcomes me. I find at these times I also appreciate the simple and little pleasures of my life. How about you? Do you de-stress in nature, or are you uncomfortable and a bit cautious about the great outdoors? If so, don't worry, you're not alone. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me a woman who knows her nature. RUMAP, she's the founder of Outdoor Afro, a community that reconnects African Americans with natural spaces and one another through activities such as camping, hiking, biking, fishing, gardening, and skiing. Rue serves on the Board of Advisors for the Children and Nature Network and is a fellow with the Center for Whole Communities. She visited the White House last year to participate in a think tank to inform the rollout of Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative, and she's the mother of three beautiful children. RUMAP, welcome to Childhood Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's fun to see you.
It's so fun to see you, too. And this is my favorite topic, so.
Yes, yeah, it is your favorite topic. And Outdoor Afro is a really wonderful place to go. Tell us about that. Why did you start it? Why have you been working so hard? What's it about?
Well, Outdoor Afro evolved from many, many experiences in my life, but a few core ones. One was a love of nature instilled in me by my parents. As you know, I lived in Oakland, California all my life, but we also had a ranch up in Northern California. And being there in that on that property every other weekend, I was able to just be free in nature. I was able to ride my bike along country roads and explore the creek, and the stars would just pop at night. And I was able to expand on those experiences by being a Girl Scout and participating in my rec and park. And then as I grew older, I started exploring the backcountry. I had roommates who introduced me to even deeper and more intense outdoor experiences. And then I also was an early adopter of computer technology. I had a Commodore 64 when I was 11 years old. And I've always cared about connecting people to resources that mattered, resources that could really enhance their lives. So when I really sat with myself back in 2009 and asked myself the question, and through conversations with others, revealed that, you know, this is what I really wanted to do, find a way that I can be me, but to help people enhance their own lives. And so Outdoor Afro began as a personal sharing, but quickly, I mean, immediately, people from all over the country raised their hands by posting their pictures, their stories, their blogs, and said, me too. I love the outdoors too. So Outdoor Afro is more than just a blog. It is about helping to amplify the bright spots of outdoor engagement. It's about saying, yes, we do love the outdoors, and here's where we can start. Here's how we can remember our history in nature, and how can we possibly expand on what we already know and what we've already done in our own lives. We tap into the wisdom and knowledge of our grandmothers who understood the medicinal value of plants, our grandfathers who could identify birds, and a whole legacy of meaningful outdoor engagement that has been somewhat disconnected from a current generation, but it's still there. And so Outdoor Afro, it's about reminding us of who we already are.
Well, so I'm, Brooklyn-born white girl, and I find the Outdoor Afro website is very inviting to me. So I just want to make that clear and for people listening, but also ask you about that. I, in no way do I feel excluded from it because I'm not African-American, and I think your goal there was to say, come on, sisters and brothers, let's do this together, and it's for everyone.
I'm so glad you brought that up, and I think that's been part of the success of Outdoor Afro is that the message is universal. While focused on the African-American community and experience, it connects itself to a whole movement. And so this is why I've participated in a number of other initiatives, even though I'm talking about this slice of culture, American culture, on the website, it is no Afro is required. And so I have found that the participation has been so diverse and so encouraging. And the tone of the conversation, I have made sure, remains about what's positive and versus what's divisive. And it's so easy to go down that road. And once you do, where do you go from there?
Well, it seems to me that one of the goals, and of course, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you've seen that there are certain barriers based on culture, based on experience, based, you know, also on our history of racism, that have sort of made it harder for African Americans, other people of color, perhaps, to go ahead into nature, to feel included, to have the resources. So I get the sense what you're trying to say is, let me help you see there are ways, and you tell us your ways so that other people can know. So I think I'd like to know a little bit more about the race piece in terms of what some of those barriers are for the African-American community and perhaps the Latino community and other people who haven't felt so connected to nature here.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question with so many different answers, because as you know, the African-American experience in America is not a singular one. However, there are some universal barriers, I think, that face all Americans, all people, such as fears and perceptions of the outdoors. That's where bears are. That's where, you know, it's a lack
snakes.
Of snakes. Yeah. And or even dirt. I don't want to be dirty. There's a lack of feeling of security. I can't go and lock my door. So therefore, I don't feel as safe in a camping situation versus how I might feel in a hotel, for instance. There are some economic barriers, but I think those economic barriers are more perceived than real, because people don't, they'll see the price tag of a tent and don't recognize that you can use that tent for 10, 20 years even. There's also, just sometimes a lack of feeling welcomed in nature. When you go into the backcountry and the wilderness-based parks and trails and you don't see people who look like you,
right?
Not having that reflection of who you are, either represented by the interpretive staff of the park or other users of the park, can cause people to not feel like that's a place for them. But what I do often remind people is that people of color are using natural spaces, but they're doing it closer to home. Unfortunately, we still lead pretty segregated lives when it comes to where we worship, how we spend our recreational time.
That's
and
right.
So imagine, what would you choose to do if you had your free time? You'd probably want to be with family. You'd probably want to be
neighbors.
In the neighborhood.
Right.
And so if you go to your local parks, if I go to Lake Merritt here in Oakland, California, for instance, it is popping with diversity.
That's right.
And so we have to really contextualize what we're talking about when we're talking about the outdoors, because the outdoors is everywhere.
That's such a good point. And I know that after I met you and connected with Outdoor Afro, I became much more aware when I went places like Tilden Park, even to go take my grandson, or if at Point Reyes or other places, I suddenly became more aware of people of color versus not, and looking around. And I realized that I didn't see a lot of people of color where I was going when it was further from the neighborhoods,
right.
Even Tilden Park.
Right.
And I realized that there is a lot of work to do. And I think someone like Oprah going and taking her camping trip was in a part an attempt also to say people who look like me, you know, can do this in whatever way feels comfortable to them.
And I think that's the point right there. How can the outdoors be comfortable and relevant to you? How can your experience in the outdoors help you to live a more empowered and powerful life? It is not about a transactional relationship. It is not about quotas. It is not about we need to have X number of this minority group be at the parks. That is so not the point. It is about how can the outdoors be a beneficial resource for all people. And again, I'm focused on a specific cultural reference within Outdoor Afro, but ultimately I want to see people using the outdoors in a way that makes their lives be better.
So a lot of places I want to go with this conversation, but first I want to go back for a minute and talk to you a little bit about your dad, because he gave you an opportunity because of the land he had and because of his love for the land. He gave you an opportunity, and it's because of that you are here today and doing the work you're doing to try and help others. How did he get there? How did he find the land? What inspired him?
Well, thank you for acknowledging my father, A.C. Levias. He's no longer living, and so much of my work is really a tribute to him. It's a way of keeping his memory alive and those values that I can't say I always appreciate it. He was a man who didn't have a lot of education. He was actually my foster father, and so I was placed with a couple who was already, you know, in the retirement time in their life, and so they had a lot more leisure time, and they had worked really hard. They had migrated to Oakland from Texas to work in the shipyards, and were very thrifty and frugal with their money, and just came from an era where hard work really meant that you could create a life for yourself with a lot more ease than what we're seeing today. And so they saved 50 cents on the dollar and bought property and found later in life that they really enjoyed fishing up in the Clear Lake area, and were able to buy a property up there. And it was 6 acres, most of which was a walnut orchard. And I think the thing that really enhanced his experience and allowed him to do more was that he was also a carpenter. And so he built the structures up there and really just had this handy, thrifty, what the old folks call mother wit, you know, the ability to really connect in and be resourceful and wise and also spiritually connected too. So, you know, it was a very Southern, I didn't get that break that a lot of my peers in my generation had, where maybe their grandparents were connected to the South, but their parents were city-born. I actually had Southern parents who had Southern sensibilities around land, relationship to land, and they gave it directly to me.
And so many kids we see and their parents don't have that. You know, what they know is growing up in the projects or the apartments. I mean, I grew up in the projects in Brooklyn, and I had no idea till I went away to summer camp. And when I went to summer camp, and it was a camp for poor kids, mm-hmm. and my parents were wise enough to let us go, and I could not believe how good I felt and how connected I felt, not only to nature, but myself. And how happy I was, and I would cry when I had to come home.
Oh my gosh, me too.
And I think about how that changed me. It gave mm-hmm. me so much hope, mm-hmm. and it gave me a sense of myself and confidence, and I got over fears of latrines and the dark and all kinds of things. And I think about so many kids who are missing out on that connection. And I think you're doing the work you're doing, in part the legacy of your father, but sure. It's what he tapped in you. It's what he helped come alive in you. And, you know, this can come alive in anyone at any time. But when you have it passed on, I think it's wonderful. I mean, I didn't do enough camping with my kids when I look back. I did some. You know, they had a lot of chance to go with friends, and they went skiing, and they did all kinds of things. But, you know, they have found their own ways as adults to make sure that happens as well. And when we look at the research, I think it's a good place to go right now is to talk a little bit about what we're finding in terms of the health, the well-being of our kids in current time. We know it's sort of the highest rates of obesity that we've seen, that kids' life expectancies are going to go down because they're not moving, they're not being active. And I also saw something that said that there's a culture of fear.
Yes.
And parents are afraid for their children's safety. A 2004 study found that 82% of mothers with children between the ages of 3 and 12 identified crime and safety concerns as the one primary reason they don't allow their children to play outdoors. It's that stranger danger that people now have. And of course, the media just totally plays into that in terms of, you know, letting us know over and over and over again of the bad things that happen. So because of all this, there's a consequence that our kids are suffering from the lack of nature. And tell me a little bit in the work you're doing of what you're hearing in terms of the consequences of that. And maybe we can then say what to do about it.
Well, yeah, I'm experiencing it not only in my work as Outdoor Afro, but I'm also experiencing it as a mother of three children. And I'm so glad that you prefaced the show around courage, because we have an enormous societal sense of urgency around kids being abducted or being harmed in some way. And I hear over and over that, and it's well-meaning. You know, people, we all want to be good parents. We all want to protect our children.
We love our kids,
right?
And we don't want anything bad to ever happen to them.
Right. And not only are we getting those messages, those repeated messages, and Richard Louv does a really fantastic job in his book, Last Child in the Woods, to talk about the media's influence over how we perceive how dangerous it is, because the statistics don't bear out. In fact, we're safer now.
Crime has gone down. And no one talks about it.
And I, you know, when I think about the roaming around the neighborhood that I did in the 70s and in the 80s.
And me back in the 50s.
For hours. I mean, no one knew where I was. I didn't have a cell phone. And it was no big deal to be gone and unaccounted for hours at a time. And I knew that when the streetlights came on, it was time for me to come in the house. And I was able to cultivate my own life and identity and social network. And so I am seeing in my work how people want their children to experience those same kinds of outdoor, unstructured experiences, but they are afraid, and they're afraid of not only what may happen to their children, but they're afraid of being judged by other parents.
Yes.
I've actually had my kids, for instance, returned home to me after sending them outside. And I, the very concerned neighbor, the well-meaning neighbor said, I saw your daughter outside playing by herself, and I just wanted to bring her home because I wanted her to be safe. And
wow.
This is a well-meaning neighbor.
And she was 18. No, I'm just kidding.
It was a well-meaning neighbor, but you know, she was reinforcing to me that I had somehow am making a wrong decision by letting my children go outside to play.
Well, I remember in New York, I forget her name now, but there's an author of a book who she let her son ride the subway by himself.
Yeah.
And people were just really furious. And now I want to say, you have to find your comfort level as a parent,
mm-hmm.
because all children are different. Some, you know, a lot of it is based on temperament and also the risk factors. Who is this child? And you really have to make those decisions. When do I let them walk to school by themselves? When do I let them go on their first camp experience so they can go out
Absolutely.
In nature? And it is up to you. But the sense that you feel you're going to be judged if you let your kids have a little more freedom is something that I think comes from this media fear.
Right. So one of the things that I encourage people to do in Outdoor Afro is to start getting to know their community. Start having block parties. Start getting out and doing evening walks with your kids. Speak to your neighbors. Know who your neighbors are. have them, you know, get to know you, you know, reinvigorate, you know, the holidays, you know, do the, you know, it's the Halloween fall season right now. And, you know, it's an opportunity for people to really come together. So if you know who your neighbors are, if you have a relationship with your neighbors, then it can often create a sense of more security and safety. It's when people live in anonymous places.
Isolation.
Where no one, there may be several families around you, you may be in a large complex, but if people aren't speaking to each other, if they don't have a relationship with each other, my kids know that if they're home alone, that they can go to up to three people in their immediate surroundings for a cup of sugar or help when needed for more urgent needs.
And I think what happens here is that as the adults, we have to stretch our comfort level about getting out ourselves. So kids learn by what they see more than by what we say and the opportunities we give them. And I think that's where, when you're thinking about, oh, here's the weekend, maybe I would like to watch the football game, and maybe I need to get those new shoes, and maybe we just have to do the shopping. That's the time to also step back and say, you know, there is a park nearby. There's, you know, wherever you live in the country, there is a place you can go that's a little more wild than perhaps your street, and we can go take an hour walk. We can take a hike. It doesn't have to be in the most beautiful spot. It doesn't have to be a Yosemite. And we can go and just look at the leaves, at the dirt. We can dig in the dirt. We can go towards the water and go to the beach and dig in the sand. All of those things are what bring us back to the earth. And I think health is really relevant here, a child's health and well-being. So tell us a little bit more about what you've learned about that.
Well, people often assume that Outdoor Afro is really about getting kids outdoors, but it's really about the multi-generational experience in the outdoors. It's, as I mentioned before, it's about tapping into the wisdom of grandparents, but it's also a recognition that parents need a connection to nature and need to model that connection to nature in order for their kids, like in the case of my father and me, that if they're modeling it, if they're into it, the kids get into it. So it's really about how can we sustainably connect people to nature. Now, it's easy to go from a program perspective and take kids, you know, out into nature. But once that child goes back home, if that parent isn't bought in to that idea or introduced or incorporated into the activities, then it's not sustainable. And I find that when I go out with my kids, it's a gift to me. It's a time that I'm unplugged from my phone.
Blood pressure goes down.
Yeah. And I'm able to give them attention and focus unlike any other time in our day, because I can hear them in a different way. There's a pace that slows down. I'll never forget going camping with my teenage son. And as you know, teenagers, you know, they're pulling away and not necessarily wanting to share very much of what's going on
or
in their lives.
Or hang out the whole weekend with mom.
Right. But he was in the tent with me, and the other two children were asleep, and he wanted to ask questions. He wanted to share what was going on in his life. And I know that in that quiet place and space is what produced that moment for us. So
right, because if the TV was on or the computer was there,
there's better
he'd
things
go to
do
that.
At home. Yeah.
And if you don't have that space of silence and that space where you, again, go back to your essential nature, your own essential nature, you miss those times. And I think health-wise, it does help with blood pressure and pulse. It gets people active so that their physical activity is working against the overconsumption of sugar and oil and, you know, just a lot of processed foods. I think also a lot of research has been done about focus and attention. There's something about, I think, the lack of overstimulation that we get in so many places in our current time allows children actually to focus more. It allows them to problem solve.
That's right.
You know, my kids went to Outward Bound where they had to, you know, figure out how to get from point A to B and how to live by themselves for 3 days in the wilderness. Boy, that makes you feel confident. And I think it's important not to blame oneself or your parents for not providing that. Parents, no reason to feel guilty. It's just what it is, and it's never too late to change that. And it might be that someone else in your life is going to give you that opportunity. And I want to ask our producer, Lorenzo Plazzola, to come in and talk to us for a minute, because he is someone who grew up without a lot of these opportunities, and I think having his voice would be really fun here. After a short break, we'll hear some voices from the community, and then our very own producer, Lorenzo Plazzola, will join us in studio to tell us about his experiences growing up and how he's still discovering the wonders of the outdoors. Today's show was pre-recorded. We won't be taking calls.
Pick up the phone and get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Every weekend for the past 9 years, we've been on your radio talking about the things that matter to parents and others who care about kids. With the bad economy and major state budget cuts, Childhood Matters has lost half of our funding. As a nonprofit, we rely on many sources for the money we need to bring you this vital program. If you know an organization or person who would be willing to help us continue to provide you, our listeners, Childhood Matters, please email us at info@childhoodmatters.org. And if you can, visit our website and make a donation. With gratitude, I'm Nurse Rona.
Explore the ocean's most feared creatures at the Monterey Bay Aquarium during Shark Days on February 11 and 12. Dive into the captivating world of sharks and discover the fascinating truth about these awesome predators through special programs and activities. Meet the people that feed the aquarium's sharks, and don't miss special bat, ray, and shark feeding programs. The aquarium will also have Jim Toomey, Sherman Lagoon's creator, share the creative genius behind his famous cartoon strip. For details, visit MontereyBayAquarium.org. Brought to you by the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
This is Nurse Rona letting you know that you can connect with Childhood Matters anytime on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Now you can get the latest tips, resources, book recommendations, and share your thoughts with other parents and become part of our virtual community. As always, you can sign up for our podcasts and download past shows, community reports, and interviews. Visit childhoodmatters.org to learn more. That's childhoodmatters.org. And tell your friends.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 3 teens who have been in a relationship have experienced dating violence or abuse? The California Adolescent Health Collaborative wants teens to know that dating violence isn't always physical. It can be extreme jealousy, insecurity, verbal abuse, isolation from family and friends, or using text messaging to monitor whereabouts. If you or someone you know is experiencing dating violence, call the National Dating Abuse Helpline at 1-866-331-9474 or text LOVEIS to 77054 to get help today.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Rue Mapp, founder of Outdoor Afro, and we're talking about getting outside and playing with our kids. Let's take a listen to an interview that our producer did with some folks.
I'm associate producer Lorenzo Plazzola, and I'm talking to some people about spending time in the outdoors with the family. So what outdoor summer activities did you and your family do growing up?
Well, it was mostly going to parks, like barbecues. Extended family would be all together. So during the summer, it was a lot of just going out to the local park, doing barbecues all day. Or there was a nice lake about half an hour from where we live, where we used to go. Get there early. And then basically just stay there till they closed it out.
We went camping one summer. We went to the Chabot Camping Center for like 2 days. I remember we went to some park in San Francisco like a couple of times, and we did some barbecuing, but that was about it. We didn't really go outside that much as a family.
And what was your favorite part of being outside, you know, doing outside activities?
Being out there was always games and stuff. They would always bring a ball or something, and it was always just fun being out there on a hot day.
Well, as a kid, I guess it was just fun to be with my family and have that connection. Like, we would, you know, play catch and things like that. It was fun to run around and just be outside.
Was it something that happened often, or was it sporadic?
During the summer, I would say probably maybe once a month, with the weekends maybe being something smaller, maybe, you know, the family coming over and having some kind of barbecue or some kind of food.
My parents would work a lot, so there wasn't really much time to go out and spend money, because we didn't really have that much money growing up, so it was a luxury to go out, basically.
And how important do you think it is to a child's development to experience outdoor time with the family?
I think it's important because it really creates a connection between the child and the parent.
I think it's really important to be outside with the family, and you build a bond. Definitely, especially with your immediate family.
You don't think you can find the same bonding, I guess, being a little bit more indoorsy, per se?
Yeah, but it's when you're indoor, everybody can, you know, from what I can see, is just either on their phone, or if you're younger, you're playing on some kind of game console, or they're watching TV. And being a Mexican family, you got your mom or maybe even your dad watching Mexican soap operas. So everybody kind of goes around about their own business. And it's not until you have some kind of special event or you go out to the outdoors that you get distracted from all those actual distractions. You actually enjoy being with your immediate family.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Thank you to those voices. And also thank you, Lorenzo Plazola. I'm really glad that you can come join us in studio now. Hi, Lorenzo.
How's it going?
Good. So I think it was wonderful when the executive director of Interactive Parenting Media said, I think it's time for a camping trip. How did you feel when she suggested that?
Well, I was actually really happy. I'd never gone camping before, and it was kind of a blessing. It was something that I've always wanted to do, and you know, ever since I went into college, I've been trying to, you know, pretty much accomplish all my bucket lists as a child. So Disneyland is still waiting there, pending.
Uh-huh. Aha! So, we have to think about a trip to Disneyland.
Yeah.
And why do you think it was that you didn't go camping up until this point?
Well, first and foremost, I have immigrant parents, and my dad was working literally almost 24/7. So it's like we didn't really have that much family time, you know. and then all of a sudden my mom started working too. So then I was pretty much spending a lot of time with my older sister. The second one was that, you know, my dad grew up in the 1940s in rural Mexico without running water, without heat. You know, in camping conditions. So
yes.
The way he saw it was, yeah, wait, I came to this country to avoid all that, you know,
to progress.
And yeah. We're going to go out into the middle of the woods. I already grew up in the woods. You know, he said, I already grew up in the woods. Why would I do that again? I don't get it. You know, it's just alien to him.
Rue, that makes so much sense.
Yeah. Well, I've actually heard people say, why would I go and play homeless?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right that camping, especially primitive camping conditions, are not attractive to people who have been striving for generations to improve their life circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great point. So for you, there was not much opportunity or encouragement because it didn't make sense with your parents' values.
Pretty much.
And their time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, mostly their time. And then when I would bring it up to my dad, he would give me that. You give me that spiel, you know. So.
And so you had the opportunity to go camping for the first time. What did you think?
I had a lot of fun. It was a nice change of pace. You know, I've just been in the urban environment for so long. You know, it's always nice to be in a change of environment and to breathe a little bit less smog. I started off with a baby step. I went to this place called Folsom Lake. So it's not hardcore camping. It's, you know, there's still a lot of facilities around. But it was nice to be in a change of pace. I do have to admit that I was a little nervous, you know, sleeping in a tent where the only thing between a serial killer and me is just a piece of cloth, but
that's right. And that idea of the serial killer comes from the movies.
Yeah, the movies. I knew there weren't going to be any bears. It was still too urbanized, I guess.
And I think, what do you think, Rue? Also, I think our own fears based on change and unknown raise up feeling. So we might have a fear, and then it's easy to say, oh, a serial killer or a bear. But it's really also our fear of the unknown.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I'm happy to hear in the story is that you went with people who are more experienced. And so I tell people all the time, if you've not gone, please don't take that on if you've never tried it before, because you'll be consumed by all the what ifs. So go with people who can help minimize those fears and reassure you and be a resource for you, from equipment to, you know, just feeling more comfortable where you are.
And so then the experience was one of you got over being afraid. You probably slept okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't going to keep me from sleeping. You know, it's just in the back of your head, you just have this thought like,
right,
okay, I'm under a tree.
In a tent.
In a tent.
Right.
You know, anything could happen. But I mean, the worst thing, what, a wild turkey is going to peck at, you know.
You were a little vulnerable, though. But you are a big guy. Yeah. You're a nice, strong man. You probably figured I could take care of myself.
Yes.
Right. And did you notice anything else about how you felt just hanging out there in nature? Was there anything different?
What I really enjoyed was the slower pace. You know, I often joke around how I wish I could just stop time and not have to worry about a clock. And because we were out in the woods, and, you know, everything was just much slower pace, and it was really relaxing. I really enjoyed that. The fact that, you know, I didn't have to rush anywhere, or like, oh, wait, is it 9 a.m.? All I had to worry about was, oh, let's make some food.
Yes, and cooking is fun there, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you're in the outdoors.
It's nonstop barbecue. Yeah. It's better than that.
That's true.
That's right. And you just don't get picky about things.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everything tastes a little better.
It does.
It's simplifying life. Mm-hmm. You also, I want to ask you also about your first kayaking experience. So here's again Sarah Calderon, our wonderful executive director, saying, I think it's time to do something else. And how about kayaking? Did that have a similar feel for you? Like, this is unusual for me. I'm not used to doing this.
Well, I was a little worried just because, I mean, the weekend prior, or I think it was 2 weeks prior, I barely learned to doggy paddle.
In the water, to swim.
In the water, yeah.
Because, again, you didn't have the opportunities to learn to swim.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my childhood was, here's a soccer ball, have fun, you know?
Yeah, well, that's good.
So,
soccer is good.
Soccer is good, yeah. But I was a little worried, but then I realized, okay, I have a life jacket on. I mean, I know enough to make it to shore, and the good thing that Folsom Lake isn't super deep. It's not crazy deep. I believe it's a man-made lake anyway. I mean, we can see the trees popping out from the shore. But it was a different change of pace once again. It was a lot of fun. I'd never done it, and just, you know, it was free. I don't know how to explain it. It's just a lot of fun. I felt like a kid.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up something interesting about water, and I find that in the African American community, similarly, lots of people have not had the opportunity to learn how to swim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have a pool that's nearby and instruction that's, you know, reasonably priced or free, and your parents don't swim, you don't have the opportunity, and you really miss out on doing a whole number of activities related to water, including kayaking and snorkeling and boating. There's a lot less comfort of doing those things if you don't know how to swim. The added thing with African American women is our hair and the way that our hair changes in water, and that people don't want to be embarrassed if they get their hair wet and carry on for an entire weekend without, you know, having their hair supplies.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be anything you would track, but it's very well established that little girls, when you've gone to the hairstylist and your mom has paid $40 to get your hair done, she'll tell you, don't get your hair wet. So that keeps
and that's an issue for
that's a big issue. And so I just want to, you know, let you know that, I mean, that's something that's so part of the work I do, is around water and how lack of comfort in water can really limit the kinds of activities that people
I see
do.
Here a note that says the U.S. Surgeon General said it was a big issue with African-American women.
Yeah, and that was a really refreshing perspective to get, because for the first time we've actually had this addressed in a more public forum, something that's been widely known, because it's keeping African-American women from working out. as well as from engaging with outdoor activities. And so one of the things I share with programs is that they need to be very aware of this and help people to mitigate that in their own way. So if you know you're going to be taking kids out in the rain or other wet conditions, give people a heads up so they can make some decisions about how they might wear their hair. And for African-American women, we talk about alternative hairstyles that lend themselves to more active engagement.
Like my daughter-in-law has a very short haircut because she's very, very active all the time and she always looks beautiful and she doesn't have to fuss.
Well, you know, I have natural hair, although I straighten it from time to time. And so, you know, it's really about balancing who you are with your outdoor groove.
That's right.
You don't have to compromise.
That's great.
I like how you bring that up about embarrassment, because I remember as a kid, and also another thing that kept me from going, because I would get invited by friends if I wanted to go camping. I mean, I knew it was going to be a no-go because, you know, my parents didn't really
want you to go.
Yeah, they didn't really want me to go. but another thing that always freaked me out was, they're going to want to go to swim, and I don't know how to swim, and they'll be embarrassed, you know, being like so older, and then you don't know how to swim, because I would always get that reaction. You don't know how to swim?
I know, I hate that, don't
you? What the heck is wrong with you,
man? I know.
Or ride a bike.
Yeah. Same thing with riding bikes, going skiing, doing all kinds of things that you get embarrassed and humiliated, and then here you are at, the age you are, about 25, you're able to say, I don't know how to do that, and that's okay, because you have confidence now.
Yeah.
And so, but when you're a, 15-year-old who's, everyone else is swimming and you don't know how to, and that's where you can say, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this and get someone. And the point of all this, and for you, Lorenzo, too, is the point that, yes, it wasn't your parents who could encourage it for their reasons. They worked hard. They had their own history. But sometimes it's a big sister. Sometimes it's a neighbor. Sometimes it's an employer, a friend who says, come on, we're going to do this together. And I want to just encourage people to reach out to friends who might not have that experience of going hiking. Take an hour hike up into the hills somewhere and take someone with you who hasn't done that.
I couldn't agree with that even more. And I would even go a second step that, you can get gear and equipment from people. You don't have to invest in a lot of infrastructure to get outside. I have borrowed so much stuff from coworkers. If all you have to do is sound off that you want to get outdoors, and I am almost certain you've got someone in your network who can support you.
So let's go back for a minute to focus on why this is so important. It's important. You can just hear it in Lorenzo's voice, how he is happy and excited when he thinks about doing these things. It's important because it gets us physical and active. It gets us connected to our earth, and part of that connection is to the part of ourselves, our own essential nature. And I just want to read this to the American Institutes for Research. They conducted a study submitted to the California Department of Education of the impact of week-long residential outdoor education programs. The focus was on at-risk youth, 56% of whom reported never having spent time in a natural setting. Comparing the impact on students who experienced the outdoor education program versus those in a control group who had not had the outdoor learning experience, results were statistically significant. Major findings were 27% increase in measured mastery of science concepts, enhanced cooperation and conflict resolution skills, gains in self-esteem, gains in positive environmental behavior, and gains in problem solving, motivation to learn, and gains in classroom behavior. This is so important. Kids with attention problems go out in nature and there is no problem.
That's right.
Kids who, have trouble taking turns now learn to take turns. And I think also the piece that I just want to make sure we get to is you become a steward of the earth. Lorenzo, for you, going camping and going kayaking, I think has probably sparked something in you that would make you want to take better care of the environment, right or wrong?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a really important distinction to make, because if you have had a generational relationship to Yosemite, to your local parks. You're going to be at the poles to protect those places and spaces if those places are ever at risk, or if there's a need to, you know, financially support those places, or a need for advocacy. You can be on board because it's about a personal relationship. And I think the part that we have to keep in mind is that this is all about relationships. It's a relationship to ourselves. It's a relationship to land. We actually have data that proves that time and nature engages us in a completely transformative way. But at the end of the day, this is about relationships and relationships to one another in the context of nature.
That's a wonderful way to put it, Rue, really. And so, Lorenzo Plazzolo, what's your bucket list now when it comes to nature?
My bucket list.
I haven't given you any chance to think about this. This is just spontaneous here.
This might be a jump, but now I want to do backpacking.
Yeah.
Go, man. And I think, again, the key there from what Rue said before is to find people who've done it.
Mm-hmm. And I can help you.
And really go with people who are experienced, because, you know, we always have a little risk when we go out in nature, depending on where we go and what the climate is, et cetera. But you can, if you're with people who have done this before, it's really pretty safe.
It is. And luckily, there's so many programs that if people want to tap into any of these activities, they don't have to feel like they have to take it on themselves.
Good.
Or even if you can't find anyone in your immediate network, get on your local parks, your regional parks, your national parks websites, and there are professionally led trips and experiences. The local REI store in North America has a whole range of trips as well as classes and gear that you can rent. So there are so many ways that you can plug in to professional expert networks to guide you in your way, in whatever way you choose to engage with the outdoors.
So, Rumap, if people wanted to, if they had questions, is that the kind of thing they could also reach out to you about? Tell people your website.
Absolutely. OutdoorAfro.com. And the place where people often ask questions is on our Facebook page. There are thousands of people engaged with the network on a regular basis from all over the country. There's lots of role modeling and expertise, but there's also a lot of beginners in the network. So I really want to encourage people to reach out. And one of the things that I can do personally, if you want to email me, there's a contact button you can hit, and I can address your unique situation if that's the case. But reach out to the networks that are there. There are plenty there that are welcoming you and excited to have you in nature and want you to not only be successful, but to live an enriched life as a result.
And I want to recommend Richard Louv's, that's Louv, his work. The Last Child in the Woods was his first book about nature deficit disorder, and also The Nature Principle. Really good books to take a look at, and Children and Nature Network as well. Rumap, thank you for everything you do for folks.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to talk about this work.
And Lorenzo Plazzolo, I look forward to hearing more about your backpacking trips soon.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I look forward to doing them.
Take good care. And now let's take a listen to an interview our producer Felsha did with the San Francisco physician, Dr. Avril Swan.
I'm producer Felsha Zuschlag, and this week I spoke with Dr. Avril Swan, a family physician and mother of three. Her private practice in San Francisco emphasizes the benefits of getting outdoors in conjunction with standard medical prevention and care to keep patients at their happiest and healthiest. Can you tell me a little bit about your history as a medical doctor and the patients that you see in your practice?
I've been in practice for almost 9 years, and I have a small family practice in Noe Valley. And I have the whole spectrum of family medicine. I see people from birth through, I don't know, my oldest patient is 104 years old, so the whole lifetime. And our particular practice likes to use what's called integrative medicine, which is really just trying to use everything at our disposal that will help. So in addition to Western medicine, just taking time to talk to people about nutrition and exercise and lifestyle and other modalities such as acupuncture and chiropractic and other things that can be helpful to people's health.
And when you were growing up, was being outdoors an important part of your childhood and development? And how does that affect the way that you interact with your patients?
being outside as a kid and prior to my medical education was an incredibly important part of my life. When I was growing up, I grew up in the city, but as most parents today recognize, had a whole lot more freedom than a lot of kids today, and so was able to go into the park and ride my bike and spend time playing outdoors. And as a parent and as a practitioner now, I'm really coming to understand how important that was for my development, and it's important to me to emphasize that to my patients and to my family now.
And what are you seeing with your patients in terms of nature deficiencies, and why aren't people spending more time outdoors?
It's really interesting because the problem really spans across every socioeconomic level for many different reasons. You know, people who are at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum don't go outside because of safety issues or because of other circumstances that make it difficult for them to access outdoor time and nature time. And on the other end of the spectrum, people, kids in particular, are so overscheduled with activities that they're, maybe they get outside, but it's for things like, you know, their basketball game or their soccer game or for going here to there, and they're taken by car, and there's not a lot of kind of free exploratory time outside. At the same time, we're seeing more than ever diabetes and heart disease presenting at younger ages, and depression and things like attention deficit disorder really highly diagnosed. So what I do when I talk to my patients about these things is I keep it in mind as one of a list of issues that I need to address. And I find out from them, well, how much time do they spend outdoors and how much free time do they spend outdoors? For some people who simply don't get outdoors, sometimes the very first step is just go outside. You know, it doesn't even have to be to a national park. It can just be outside your front door. You know, when and, you know, how in your neighborhood can you find a time when you would feel safe just to be outside breathing some fresh air for a little while? And then, you know, I talk to people about resources that might be available in their areas to kind of go to the next step. But I think simply bringing to people's attention that it's an important part of their health is the first step.
And as a mother of three with a busy medical practice, what would be your advice to individuals who want to make the step towards taking more time to be outdoors?
You have to do what it is that you want for your children. So if you're telling your kids that they need to be spending time outside, then you have to practice that as well, because they will absorb and follow what it is that they see. So make time every week to do something for yourself and for your kids. Get the TVs and the computers out of their bedrooms. Make sure that they understand the importance to you of spending time in nature and not being overscheduled and overstressed. So, you know, I think the thing is that all of us have really, really busy lives, but we see so many illnesses today that are a consequence of spending too much time inside and of being overscheduled and overstressed. And so just to really try to take a preventative outlook on that kind of stuff and to spend some free, unstructured time outside every week, every day.
Thank you very much to Dr. Avril Swan, who took the time during a family beach outing to talk with me for this piece. And for Childhood Matters, I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Thank you to our producers, Felsha Zuschlag and Lorenzo Plazola at the controls. And my gratitude to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week. And remember, spend time with your child and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.